This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, your host. Joining me for this bonus post-match reaction to the Everton game and pretty much our season going down the pan with the final result, which was a 1-1 draw. We've got a full house here. We've got Mr. Dan Rogers from the Villa Underground. Welcome.
Hello.
Mr. Chris Budd.
Hello.
And Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome.
Hello.
Right, Everton. It was a must win. I don't like that phrase, must win, but this legitimately was a must win. It was, if we won it, we were buying a ticket to the final relegation battle of the last two games. Bud, you were trying to convince us at the end of the last show that it's a must not lose, but peer group pressured you on that in terms of a win. I mean, how do you feel about Villa's situation now?
Well, it's totally out of our hands, isn't it, now?
Yeah.
Even if we win both of our games, you are still reliant on other teams now.
Yeah, and the fact that Bournemouth came back into the picture has really reinforced what you've just said, really.
Well, you're reliant on probably one of Watford or West Ham blowing up and then Bournemouth dropping points somewhere where they look like they might not.
Yeah. Just to give you the Bournemouth, I think they're playing Southampton, and their last game of the season is what we've just played away at Everton. And I think if Bournemouth are fighting for the possibility of survival, I think they can win that game if they want to. I mean, just let's talk about the game. I thought, you know, Villa's midfield actually showed up. That's probably the best that the likes of Horahan, McGinn was looking more like McGinn, and for large swabs of that game, they were bossing. They were bossing the game, and it just highlighted that we're so toothless up top that we can't take advantage of such a situation.
Well, it's what Smith said, isn't it? That the easiest way to win a game when you're 1-0 up is go up the other end and score the second, and the second goal would have killed the game. We got the chance on a plate and bottled it.
I thought we were going to hold that back a little bit. But we're cutting straight into the chase. But
no, let's not hold back. This is gathering, this small gathering here is, you know, like before a funeral, people sort of gather waiting for the hearse. No, we haven't reached the wake yet. The wake will be this London stadium. That was completely within our grasp. Everton were not particularly adventurous at all.
They were poor, put it that way. They were straight poor.
They were disinterested for long periods. And we had opportunities.
Yeah, our midfield put us in a position where we could take what we wanted from this game. And the recruitment of what we've got out wide, what we've got up front, is just not good enough, because that's what let us down today.
Absolutely. I mean, the two goals that Trezeguet scored against Palace masked an otherwise pretty ropey performance. And we saw in the first 45 minutes, and he was allowed a few minutes in the second half, unbelievably, how limited a footballer he is at a time where we need quality and pace. Then it was Samatta, who is a real head scratcher for me. That he's had a couple of identical opportunities the last two games.
He's like the invisible man at times.
Well, you saw with when Davis came on that Davis is by far from the complete striker, but he's got a number of good attributes. One of which is that Davis comes on with real purpose, and it's not even a cliched thing of, oh, you know, he's strong, he's done this, he's that.
Yeah.
He actually comes on, he holds the ball, and he can make these really quick give and go type passes. But his intent is to get towards the goal at least, you know. And Samatta was anonymous.
That's something that's developed in his game. When he gets the ball, he does turn round and he drives at the defence. And, you know, that's pretty impressive because most of the time you see your hold-up guys get the ball, they keep their back to goal and, you know, they lay it off or play it wide. And there's a couple of times that, you know, Davis's instinct was to turn and get the, you know, defence on the back foot.
I mean, this is like the part of the funeral where you talk before it and say, we didn't really like him anyway, what are we doing here? But...
I love that. That's exactly it. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Is there a pub nearby? Let's go.
Let's go there and slag them all off.
Yeah, but everything you said about Davis is correct. I mean, there was one instance in second half. I don't know how he got a foul given against him where the Everton guy's just taking him out because he was like being brave and like, heading towards the net. You know, when they were both jumping in the air. I mean, if that had happened to Samatta, he wouldn't even have got up again. There's just a weakness in these players. I mean, we're talking about Samatta not having a shot on target in how many minutes? Like over 300 now.
Yeah.
Has he even had a shot with his feet?
Yeah.
Nope. Not that I can remember.
No, I mean, you looked at Codger and you knew he wasn't a very good player to be leading the line on his own in the Premier League. But at least he would get it, you know, because he'd run into cul-de-sacs and try to take too many people on. But at least he was doing something. But you know, that's what I'm saying about Samatta being the invisible man. It's like playing without a forward there. It's like you're almost with 10 men at times. I mean, going back to Trezeguet, there was that moment where I think it was midway in the first half where Grealish, you saw an example of exactly, and Everton allowed him to do it because they backed off, but he drew in three or four of their defenders and opened up space for Trezeguet, and Grealish played it in and he just completely fluffed his lines. I mean, I think he's got his feet tied up and it's just like he's a professional footballer. Grealish has just done one of his main attributes and what he brings to this team, which is limited at times, is he can draw players away and free up space. And you know, if you're not going to take advantage of that, if you're not even on the same frequency, then you know, he's limited and he's cost us. I think if Trezeguet was, yes, he scored two goals against Palace, but if he was, you know, half a player better, I think we'd have beaten Newcastle and we'd have won this game as well.
Never, ever thought I'd be defending Codger, but when you look at Samatta's performances, would Codger have been any worse?
The thing we always said about Codger was he's an absolute liability outside of the 18-yard box, but you put him in front of goal and generally speaking, he's pretty clinical. You saw that on the one occasion he played against Liverpool. Put him in front of goal and he took his chances.
Yeah, anyway, El Ghazi, put him in front of goal and you got to flip a coin, basically.
Well, no, you don't need to. If it's a one-sided coin, and that's that he'll fluff it. The thing about that opportunity in front of goal was, you know, it doesn't matter what part of your body you get on it at that stage, even in the game. And to then start rolling around on the floor again, like, and he has got previous with feigned injury, by the way, holding his penis. Well...
hurt pride.
Sorry, there's a metaphor there. The thing about it is there's turning points in game, and that was our opportunity to get 2-0 ahead, probably similar to the Palace game, really, where Everton would have, you know, Everton weren't interested. Palace weren't interested. It kills the game off. And with our horrendous, I think it's 17 goals, late goals conceded.
Yeah, that's 15 minutes, just to quantify it.
You might as well play on the basis that you're going to concede at some point. You know, we haven't had a clean sheet away from home all season, so you might as well play on the basis that you're going to concede. And to miss opportunities like that, well, you're not good enough for the Premier League, and you're not good enough for Aston Villa.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like making the train of thought and saying, oh, yeah, Grealish, he looks around and, you know, he needs to go to another club, you know, good luck to him. But I think in this game in particular, he's looking around and going, you know, what the fuck? Because he's not as if, you know, he didn't have an incredible game, but he did enough to put other people in positions to win this game for us. And that is the frustrating thing. If you've got people whispering in your ears,
yeah,
that whatever allegiance you have for the club, and you know, you've already had Conor Hourihan saying he's too good for this club early on in lockdown, and those voices are in your head. Frustration with performances like that, because that last water break, he was not happy with somebody, you know, under no illusions that he should have done more. And I don't think his value has actually gone up through restart at all.
You could say that for a lot of them there. I mean, it's going to be a really interesting close season to see if anybody is going to pay the money that Villa want, or if Villa are just going to go, you know, we need to get some of these players out. We just need to make space for some new players to come in.
Yeah, it's interesting how they see the rebuild now, because the simplistic version was build a team around Jack Grealish, and let's see how far this, having a Villa fan as a head coach and a captain, can take us. And the answer so far is not very far. There's no room for sentiment, really. It would have been great. I mean, in my ideal, it was like we would have this kind of utopia where we were actually against all of what's claimed modern football from, you know, all the money, all sovereign wealth, et cetera, et cetera. We had this rare thing where, you know, we are this historical club and we actually have this tradition, and we've got an actual, it's almost a utopia of having a Villa fan as a head coach and a captain. But bottom line is, that's all a load of marketing bullshit at the end of the day. It means nothing.
We're certainly not Bilbao or a team like that. You know, there's not this identity thing. And
we're still looking for the Villa engine.
Yeah,
we are. And I think that we're sadly seeing him develop from another position. And in Douglas Luiz, I think that we might not see as much of him as we might want to, because he's a footballer who his development has accelerated as the season and even as lockdown has gone on. And the amount of times today, even against Palace, actually, and there's a couple of games where Villa were behind and he was trying to drive the team forward, where his footballing brain is so far ahead of those around him that you almost think it's a wasted talent. But you think, well, these are professional footballers who play together all week. How can they not know what he's, if he gets the ball and he picks it up, what his outball is going to be?
Yeah.
And there were so many times today, even where, you know, we're talking about Grealish, and where Grealish has been sat in second and third gear for a number of weeks, I think, and has cut, you know, cut a frustrated figure again at times. But he did have opportunities where that clinical cutting edge, that real bit of quality that sets you apart, that makes big clubs say, you know what, that's an £80 million footballer.
Yeah.
I want Grealish as much as anyone to be this superstar footballer for Aston Villa, and to have fought. I haven't seen that this season.
No, I haven't.
You know, I really wanted to.
The scores, the goal against Old Trafford against Manchester United, and, you know, we see that from 100 different angles. But, you know, that's just one goal. And pretty much, you know, most teams have got players who do that. And we look at them and we never really think much of them. Every dog can have its day. But, yeah, there's so few actual super highlights, and most of them are in the Championship, which is another level.
Yeah, this isn't a superstar who's carrying a team. You know, this isn't like a player scoring, I don't know, 20, 25 goals in a dreadful team. You think, how on earth have they done that? This is
he's
a player that, when the chips were down, had to come to the party, and he hasn't so far. Yeah.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Lockdown.
Yeah, and McGinn, I mean, we saw a player resembling John McGinn today, so you could argue that it is a fitness thing for him. And, you know, as I said in Match Club a few times, it's they always say it's like 6 to 8 games to get up to some kind of speed, and you saw McGinn kind of getting there, and that's why the midfield had some traction today. But while it had traction, the wider players and the centre forward were nowhere to be seen to actually capitalise on it. And, you know, at the back, I thought we were reasonably sound. I thought Konsa had a decent game defensively as well. I thought the fullbacks were all right, although I need to see the Walcott's goal again to see exactly what happened with Matt Target.
I feel sorry for Rainer. You know, Rainer barely had anything to do all game. I thought his distribution was good, but didn't have a really force. You know, some of the saves he had to make against Palace, he was far busier in that game, in a game that we won.
Yeah.
He had nothing to do.
No, yeah, good point.
It's just this mentality that almost like the job's done before they see it through. It's just arrogance is a word we're probably going to use a lot at the end of the season, but just in these games, I mean, even going right back to the Spurs game, it's like, right, we've got to this point, we've been defending well, and you can see it. It's almost just, you just sense that they've thought, right, we've done this, on to the next one before it's time.
I don't know if it's necessarily arrogance. I think
it's lack of belief and confidence.
I think they were panicking at the end of this game.
Yeah, I think it's a mentality thing. I don't necessarily think it's the, you know, we're over the line. I think it's more, actually, it's the opposite. I think it's, oh, shit, we're not over the line here. And then they retreat, and it becomes an inevitability. Like, you know, the Arsenal game was very similar. Today, you just thought, if Everton get a chance, they might take it here. And you knew we had a mistake in us. I actually thought, you know, when Konsa slipped and it was Calvert-Lewin when he put it wide, I thought that was the chance. You think, that's so typically Villa when things like that happen. Then when they sort of throw a speculative ball into the box, you just think, surely not. And then you realise it's Walcott who scored with a header, and you think, geez, it's definitely not our day when Theo Walcott's scoring with a header for the first time in probably a decade.
Yeah, we're certainly not a team, and there are teams out there, when you're 1-0 down with 10 minutes to go, you go, oh, we're fucked because we'll never get through them because they're so well organised. And we're kind of at the opposite end of that spectrum.
Yeah, we don't kill a game.
Yeah.
And that's not like from a goals point of view, but just in, you know, we're not going to sort of shut a game down and just spoil it. We don't play like that.
You know, look at the substitutes. I can't see anything wrong in game with them.
Changed the game, if anything.
Yeah, and, you know, with hindsight, you can say, well, you know, what about Algarzi coming on? He missed that chance. I think I would have subbed him for Trezeguet, so no problem with that either.
No, you got it right.
No, well, that's the infuriating thing, and that would be the bit that, if you're the coach, That's got to be infuriating to see, because
he's done everything right.
Algarzi does everything right. You know, the ball in's great. He gets in front, you know, ghosts beyond the final defender. You know, if he approaches it like he approached his header in the playoff final, he scores. Why doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he scored harder. I mean, the goal he scored against Everton actually at Villa Park was a harder goal to score. You know, it was in terms of technique.
What Grealish said about him being the best finisher in training, I think that's a complete utter lie based on the evidence, on the facts.
That's a great example of football brain and actual brain, isn't it?
Well, there's been a lot of rubbish spouted out the Villaverse, hasn't there, to be fair, this season, especially by the club.
Yeah,
so frustrating overall, though, because it is, you know, at 70 minutes, you, as Phil was saying, really, that it's hard to put your finger on what it is, because we're in control of the game. It's, I don't want to say a dead rubber for Everton, because ultimately they came back into it. But that naivety, that all of the things that you fuse to say, right, predict now what Aston Villa will do, panned out.
Yeah, I can predict exactly what I'm going to do. Some of these Villa social media posts, I will be answering with that, the Lego song, Everything Is Awesome, because that's pretty much their attitude from here on in, I think.
Yes.
But yeah, no, there's the clip that will obviously be hammering around is Jack Grealish saying there's no way we're getting relegated. There's Purslow saying nobody at the club thinks we're going to get relegated. We're going to have a fantastic season. And, you know, all this stuff kind of is there to hype us up at the start, but, you know, it always comes to bite you back in the end. I mean, you could argue that if, you know, that double injury didn't happen and we retained Heaton and Wesley, would we have fared any better? I wasn't convinced by us at any. I mean, we were struggling with them in the team, never mind out it.
Well, we'd huffed and puffed and we seriously missed McGinn at key moments, But, you know, other teams have missed big plays. You know, there'll be so many excuses we can use and will use, but ultimately it won't count for anything.
And ultimately McGinn was struggling before he got injured. And we are celebrating three players. We was, you know, the, if we call them the Trinity, Mings, McGinn and Grealish, as players really with their reputations in Championship football. And we didn't have the greatest time in the Championship. We did a 10-game run, got out of there through the playoffs, and that was basically the only highlight because we were struggling most of the time. And those three players shone because the ability, you know, wasn't there, but they even struggled in that league. So players like Horahan have, you know, been in and out the team. So these people that have been put on pedestals aren't actually that good. I don't think many of football fans of other teams will be envious of them, put it that way.
No. And to be fair to Horan, actually, am I right in saying that he's assisted every goal that Villa have scored since the lockdown?
I think
he's assisted every single goal we've scored. And there was obviously the Konsa goal against Chelsea that had come from, I think it was a Horan free kick. The free kick against Palace for Trezeguet's first. He headed the ball back in for Trezeguet's second. He obviously had the corner for El Mohamedy and the free kick today.
He's funny because his actual key stats, his assists and goals, are right up there. You know, there's never been anything to mumble about. It's just everything else.
He gives you a moment, but you need more than just a moment in the Premier League.
If you're going to play him, you need to have the players around him that can compensate for the things that he doesn't do.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and you know, to be fair, he's had a decent couple of games, the recent ones.
Yep.
Anything we should add? I mean, we can talk about the permutations of where we're going to end up at the end of the season in terms of relegation, etc. What this means, squad overhaul, who's going, who's staying, all that kind of stuff.
We'll get to that as and when, I think.
As and when. This is really just to pick off what happened at Everton. And the scenario is, I mean, as I always said, it's a must win. And I don't say that phrase very lightly. We are. That would have bought us a ticket to the last couple of games, the relegation battle. But with Bournemouth very much still honest in this battle and actually above us, it's whatever happens with West Ham and Watford. I fancy Bournemouth to get points from Southampton and Everton away in their last two. So you just sit here and now, miracle. It is a miracle because you need Villa to beat Arsenal and West Ham, and even that might not be enough. More than likely won't be enough, should I say.
No, I think, like you said, it's going to be a reality check for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if we were to win the last two and still not stay up, then you would think, then you are really in the ifs, buts and maybes lane. We think, wow, you've actually probably, if you were to win those games, you'd probably had your best run of form of the whole season.
Yeah.
And then you'd be just looking back on all the games and all the stupid moments and the barrage of mistakes.
I mean, we don't want to get too ahead of ourselves because I think that the autopsy will take place, but it would be interesting. And then this happened last time and I was looking back over some stuff and I think David and I spoke about it before on the pod that, and have done many times, is that Villa have, the local media, inverted commas, have never, will not scrutinise some of the deeper reasons for this. You know, this would be VAR moment here, slip there. There are some ingrained problems as to why Villa are where they are.
Yeah. And have been for, what, a decade?
Well, most of the modern era. Yeah. But, you know, we're still, as I say, the autopsy will come, but there was some, irrelevant of the fact that we got promoted prematurely, I suppose, there were some glaringly desperate decisions that have been made. Some of them, based on sentimentality, I do think, you know, that we stuck with certain people who, when you look at what other clubs did when they got promoted, they made big, big calls.
I mean, we're not, you know, looking at any scenarios related to Villa, but just, you know, like Southampton would fire a successful manager and get a new one in. Spurs did the same thing.
Southampton, under similar, I mean, a much smaller club than Villa, with all due respect, got rid of Atkins and got Pochettino in.
That's exactly what I was referring to.
And, you know, they had a different ownership then. I think they recently changed hands, but the point was they went out and they got the best that they could get. Repeatedly, and the evidence of that was they were mercilessly harvested by bigger clubs every season. Now, that's not where I want Villa to be.
Liverpool have built a successful Championship, European and league winning team, but on the backs of Southampton's endeavours.
Yeah, and you made the point earlier, and it'll be my final comment, that our relegation isn't because of singular moments and VAR and stuff like that. It's because how many players in our team would get into other sides' teams? Fourth bottom up. How many go?
there's just not an overall plan, is there? The search for the Villa engine didn't bring up anything, and that was obviously cast aside. And now it's been the idea, well, we'll kind of do a kind of version of the Brentford model, and we'll get Smith in to, you know, feed into that. But, you know, our trump card is we'll have Suso, who, you know, will get access to his network of European scouting, blah, blah, blah. Suso, who? He's like a yesterday man, you know, yesteryear man. But anyway, we'll get into all this autopsy stuff later on. But bitterly disappointed because, never mind that incident of we could have prevented that goal, whatever, that we had a glaring miss before and that would have stitched the game up. And in the first half, if we had a better quality of wider midfielder, I think we could have gone into the, you know, halftime a goal or two up as well. So it was in our hands and we let it slip ultimately.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, David, with one word to sum up the whole season. Preventable.
Yeah.
And on the field, off the field, preventable.
And we've always said that, you know, this team had a spectrum of ability and showed it at times, but the problem is they were so weak and there's no real ethic in there. And we go in, you know, there's a manager who has been backed through just this ideology, which he hasn't actually run through with this Premier League. I mean, this idea that, you know, always try to score an extra goal, always, you know, if you're 1-0 up, try to score two. That's the best form of defence. And we've never seen this attacking, high-pressing, let's almost say his alleged blueprints. And I'm, you know, not getting at Dean Smith there. I'm just saying, if that's not the manager we've got, what have we got? Because it just seemed a bit wishy-washy at times this season. Any final thoughts?
Not from me.
Right, please do, if you want to join us for some group therapy for the last couple of games of this season, become a patron so then you have access to Match Club, which we might do some experimental Match Clubs, I think, especially for the Arsenal game. Please do go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the patron link and that will tell you all you need to know and how to sign up, etc. Please do leave us a review if you listen on iTunes. And don't forget, if you haven't listened to it already, listen to episode 109, which is more of the proper show. And actually, it's a hell of a lot funnier than this show. This is more raw straight after the game. Anyway, let's get out of here. Let's pick up where we left off in our so-called lives. It's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
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 Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.